Hello, my name is Brian McKenna. I'm one of the editors at Computer Weekly, and I'm here to bid you a very warm welcome indeed to the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
podcast.
And those two other voices were?
I'm Caroline Donnelly, I'm a senior editor at Computer Weekly.
I'm Claire McDonald, I'm the business editor at Computer Weekly.
And Claire's rejoining us. You weren't here last week.
I was not.
What were you up to?
I was at Isle of Wight Festival.
Cool.
Getting rained on.
Oh, right, not so cool.
It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah, not too bad, but little bits of wet weather.
And also today we have with us Angelica Murray, who's been working with us while Liz Evenstadt's been on maternity leave. And I think you're coming up to the end of your current stint with us, aren't you?
That's right, yeah. Off to Brazil next week.
So sad.
It is sad.
Yeah, it's gone in a blink of an eye.
Hopefully
yeah.
You'll come back and...
I know. She's going to come live with me.
Is she? Yeah. Well, I suggested this.
Did you?
Yeah. As I'm sure you have.
Yes, I have.
So for the past 3 weeks, we went through systematically with our customary discipline and rigour. We went through the Tory leadership candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's now been whittled down to two.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone see the debates this week?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty shambolic from my point of view. There was the one on, I think, Sunday night where Boris didn't bother turning up, so it kind of felt a bit like...
He didn't even
Well, someone
what
said...
What was he doing?
Well, it's Father's Day, and people sort of made the unfair thing that he's got quite a lot of children.
He does, so he doesn't know how many children
he
has.
Yeah, he doesn't know, so he's probably off around town trying to work out who he should be.
If a woman didn't turn up to a leadership debate and was like, oh, well, it's because I have a child to look after, everyone will be like, she's not good enough for the job, doesn't have time.
No, that was just a joke, because there's been lots of things this week about how... he won't acknowledge how many children he publicly has because some of them are kind of illegitimate. Some might have been born through kind of extramarital affairs and stuff like that. So that'll be next Father's Day. He's going to be busy.
Oh, I took the joke
that far,
sorry.
No,
took it really seriously.
Yeah, you went very literal on that, Claire.
And then the second one was Boris did turn up, but it was just like five men on high stools. It looked like a boy band reunion that no one would ever ask for, and they're all just shouting over each other like it's just that noise all the way through. So they're trying to get
which boy band do you think it would be?
Probably someone really bad, like
you're going to be in trouble no matter what you say now.
Westlife?
No. No,
I hate Westlife. But yeah, with the stools and just kind of that would work. That would be them.
Maybe we can auto-tune it, make our own little version.
Well, someone has. I don't know if you remember, years ago there was a song called Because I Got High by Afro Man.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's basically done like a sort of cassette boy type thing, where, you know, where he kind of doctors people's kind of speeches and puts them to music.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to that. And they've done that song, but about Michael Gove's leadership challenge.
Right.
So it's him, like, he could have been the PM, but he got hired, because that was the whole thing. His whole campaign got derailed by the fact he made this confession that he once did cocaine. Or he did it a few times.
I mean, like, everyone's been hit, though, right?
When he was a young man in his early 30s.
Yeah.
Well, but all of them seem to have done cocaine at some point or another.
Well, yeah. Rory did opium. He said he smoked opium at a wedding.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he literally said, I've done the opium.
No, no, no. No, he said he smokes it at a wedding.
Maybe he did some opium the other evening.
Yeah, maybe.
He did implode somewhat, apparently. Took his tie off.
He took his tie off. He sat there with his feet on the ground where everyone else was sort of sat upright on their stools, and then whenever there was like a bit where the camera wasn't on him and he sort of sat there as if he looked like he was trying to keep down his dinner, like sort of doing this kind of like kind of really weird holding his breath kind of thing. It's all very weird. Like, it's just, I think the Channel 4 debate looked like a game show. It looked a bit like 15 to 1. And then this one just, yeah, like I said, like a boy band reunion. I don't know what, I think there's another one tonight, isn't there? I don't know what that will look like.
Oh dear lord.
Yeah, so with between Johnson and Hunt. Which, well, yeah, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's what the choice has come down to.
Can we do something else? Like, just pick anything else?
What, pick anyone else to do the job?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you did suggest a cat.
A cat would run the country so well.
At the beginning of that.
What is the name of the number number 10 cat?
Larry.
Okay, let's get Larry the cat.
Well, I think that's what I said, actually. Yeah, get Larry in.
Yeah, you did.
There was a thing on Twitter with Larry, with Rory Stewart trying to make friends with Larry the cat at Downing Street, and he wasn't having any of it. He just sort of walks off like, get lost, don't touch me, leave me alone. So I reckon we should let him just choose who should do it. Like, see, if Larry likes you, you're probably a good fit.
Okay. Has anyone assessed the personality of Larry the cat, having had so many strange owners over the last few years?
Yeah, he might be suffering a bit of, like, you know, attachment disorders, or like separation anxiety, because the next, you know, it's another changeover. Yeah.
I think it would be fair to say that we did struggle a little bit to connect these people to technology.
Yeah.
A wee bit. But someone on the Brexit cast said that the thing about a lot of these politicians is once they go from being head of a department or something like that, and they have to be Prime Minister and behave like Prime Minister even before they become Prime Minister, that they have to know about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, they'll need to know about Love Island.
Yeah. Need to be a all-rounder.
Yeah. So maybe they'll get better at technology, because they have to know.
Yeah. Now, that reminds me, actually, we've just been watching at home, we've been re-watching The Thick of It, and there's an episode on that where they, the minister in the first series, doesn't know anything about anything that's going
that's
on.
That's right. Yeah.
So they make him this thing called the Zeitgeist tape, where it's like sort of a clip show basically of everything that's going on. So it's like the end, like the significant end of this episode of EastEnders, you know, news headlines that everyone's talking about. So when he's put in front of the Q&A, he's like completely up to speed with everything that's going on in the world. Yeah, but then he's like, he's so pushed for time, he's like, oh, can someone make me like a Zeitgeist tape of the Zeitgeist tape, because I just don't have time to watch it all. So, and you, like I say, when you're watching that at the moment, and then also the stuff that's actually going on in the real world, you sort of realise how that must be going on in Westminster. Because these people seem so removed from reality so much all the time that it's like, that must be going on.
It has to, like a little cheat sheet.
So, and the rest of the podcast, we're going to be talking about, Angelica, you're going to be talking about innovation in local government, yeah?
Yeah. We're still talking about last week. There was so much going on last week with London Tech Week and all that. And it seems like government just waited for London Tech Week to announce a lot of things.
Yeah.
And in terms of local authority innovation, last week the London Office of Technology and Innovation launched. So that is a coalition of local authorities
across
there.
London,
yeah,
and you're going to tell us about that. And Caroline, you have been substituting for Alex, I guess.
On last week's podcast, and I didn't know what I was going to be doing like this week, and it turns out I'm just going to be pretending to be Alex all over London. It's been quite fun.
Alex Croxton, our networking editor.
So yes, I went to Connected Britain.
Was there 5G mentioned at all, do you think? Did that happen?
Well, I only went on the second day because I'm very busy and important, and my services to IT journalism were required elsewhere in the capital that day. But apparently the first day was all about 5G, and then the second day was about full fibre broadband deployments, which I'll be talking about in a minute.
I'm going to talk about the Tableau conference I was at this week in Berlin, and one other thing. Money given to Oxford for an AI centre of research as part of their Humanities Research Centre. Claire, you're going to be talking about ASOS.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. They've done some more techie bits, which I think was quite cool. So,
Cool. Well, let's begin with you, Angelica, on local government.
Okay. There seems to be a renewed push to drive innovation across London boroughs. So there's this thing that's been launched, the London Office of Technology and Innovation, LOTI. Everyone seems to be very excited about it.
Yeah.
So it's a coalition funded by Greater London Authority and London Councils. Started with 15 boroughs. So there's 32 in London. So the idea is to share best practice and work together in innovation projects.
Do you think that this is a better plan than previously, because I know that for a long time the government has been trying to, you know, like share best practice and make sure that you can replicate systems where they might have similar requirements, so like booking systems, for example. Mm-hmm. If every local authority has their own in-house built doctor's booking system, for example. Well, that's a bad example because the NHS is separate, but you know what I mean. There'll be systems that every local authority needs, and previously they were trying to share those so that they didn't get disparate systems and replication, or, you know, like bad data collection.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my understanding is that before there's been initiatives like that, but it's all a bit disparate and sort of trying to make it up as they go along. Mm-hmm. Whereas LOTI is a more structured approach to innovation in local government.
Mm-hmm.
So they got someone that has a lot of recognition in the industry. So the former director of innovation at Nesta, the Innovation Foundation, Eddie Copeland, is leading it.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
But so is this just a trial to see how it works? Because if it's 15 out of the 32 London boroughs, and then you think about how many counties there are with their own boroughs in each of them, how do you replicate that across the entirety of the UK?
Yeah, they said they didn't want to force people to join. So they call it the coalition of the willing and able.
Like a fantasy book.
The coalition of the willing and able.
So they're trying to get some of the boroughs that are more advanced in terms of innovation, Hackney being an example. So getting these authorities that have been doing more and for longer to sort of steer the process. And they're going to be defining priorities over the summer, but one of the priorities is going to be data.
Okay.
So how to share data and do more things around data.
That's
more
great
consistently.
To hear. And you interviewed the CIO at Hackney Council, because they're a bit of a leader, aren't they, in this field?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they're going to be sharing a lot of best practice, so sharing stuff they've been doing, and and also working with other councils to do some of these projects.
Yeah, I mean, that did sound, and that's good. So he's CIO, and you've done a full scale CIO interview with him.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
They've been doing all sorts of interesting things with trying to, for example, renovate the way they use maps to provide more information to residents on which services are available. But one interesting project they've been doing around data is to get a better understanding of the rental trends in the borough.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they have a lot of public housing, so estates, as well as a crazy real estate trend going on in Hackney. So they're trying to use data to get a better understanding of what the rental trends are.
Yeah, that's cool.
And did he give you much insight into what the response of residents has been to it, or any of the benefits they've had so far from, or are these still things that are kind of work in progress?
Yeah, it's all work in progress. They've been working with the GDS data accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
I think the process is halfway through, so they're going to be putting some sort of beta in place towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Cool. So from local government, let's go back up to the national scene, Connected Britain.
As some of the things that we talked about at the show actually probably, you know, were, it was at a local level as well. So, and I'm sure there's a few trends we're going to talk about, actually Claire and Angelica probably come in on as well. But yeah, the show itself, Connected Britain, it was in London's fashionable Islington at the London Design Centre. But it's all about highlighting sort of advances in network connectivity across Britain. So there was on the first day, that's it, which I missed a lot of talk about 5G that day. The second day, particularly the morning keynotes, which I was sat in, were all around kind of full fibre broadband and how the rollout of that is progressing across the UK.
Mm.
But also it's connected Britain from sort of in a more literal sense as well. So there were, in the afternoon, there was quite a lot of interesting sessions around kind of digital inclusion and making sure, you know, if you're rolling out all these connectivity services across the UK, how do you make sure as much of the population as possible can access them, and some of the challenges that exist from a national and local level around how you tackle some of those issues as well. So it was quite a wide-ranging event, as it happens. I don't know if you guys are the same, but when you end up going to events that aren't quite on your beat, I always panic a little bit. Like, oh my god, what if this isn't news? Or what if this isn't,
yeah,
you know, isn't, what if this is stuff we always cover? Like, what is this news? But no, there was loads going on, so it was really interesting for me as someone who tends to just stick on kind of cloud data centers and a bit of public sector every so often.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the morning keynotes on the first day, it featured kind of senior management representatives from various telcos from across the UK. So you had TalkTalk there, OpenReach, and who else? Three. So I know they're, well, they're a telco, but they're kind of more on the sort of mobile side and stuff. But so they were all talking about kind of full fibre broadband and how important it is around kind of getting super fast internet across the UK, but also some of the challenges that the UK has faced in kind of achieving that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this, there was some stats shared at the show that sort of showed that the UK is coming from quite far behind on this. You know,
yeah,
we have, from a European perspective, we have the lowest coverage, or one of the lowest coverages of full fibre broadband and super fast connectivity in Europe. But they were sort of saying, like, yeah, we're still quite far behind, but compared to a year ago, things have markedly stepped up and improved quite quickly.
So, considering what you heard at the event, and Boris Johnson's pledges to deliver broadband for the whole of the UK, realistic?
Well, that was actually flagged by quite a few speakers. I think it happened just the day before, so a few of them were kind of like, haven't really had time to digest this.
Yeah,
but
they're
interesting.
Not rewriting their speeches.
But yeah, but it did come in, like I say, it was referenced quite a lot, because one of the things they've said as to why in the past year the picture around all the progress that the UK's made on full fibre broadband has improved so much is because the government has sort of done a bit of an about turn. There was, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but the CEO of TalkTalk sort of made the point that, you know, a couple of years ago, the UK was very on the fence about how they support these deployments. And in recent times, the government has sort of, actually, no, you know what, we're going to chuck more funding at this, we're going to get behind it, we need connectivity across the UK. So then you've got someone who is vying to be Prime Minister sort of saying, right, okay, I'm behind this as well. You know, they're all quite sort of, yeah, this is great, you know, if Boris is Prime Minister, he's really going to get behind what we want to do. So yeah, it's all quite, like I said, there's some people a bit like, I don't, you know, haven't had time to digest it, and then other people are like, yeah, woohoo, thanks Boris. So, but there are some other things they talked about as well as to why the full fibre rollout has kind of helped as well. And obviously the big thing was around the breaking up of BT OpenReach and how that has kind of increased competition within the telco sector.
Mm.
And then it's kind of proof that, you know, if you open up a market to more suppliers, progress speeds up. But there were still a couple of barriers that people sort of talked about as to why, you know, there's still work that can be done. Although the government has made huge strides in helping things, they've also, there's a few other things that they could get more help with.
Mm-hmm.
So the CEO of OpenReach mentioned that they have to pay this cumulo tax, which is kind of like, that's it, it's like one of these things, oh my god, this sounds bad, like, but I don't cover this section. Does everyone know about this?
Yeah,
this seems like new.
Oh,
music.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cumulo tax.
No one else knows about this.
Because
do you? Okay. So yeah, so that is apparently like a kind of, I don't know, my understanding of it is it's like a sort of commercial property tax that OpenReach has to pay on all the ducts, lines and exchange cabinets and stuff like that they have.
The ducts?
I don't know what that is either. I just like, I was like, ducts, line, poles, blah blah blah. That basically the street infrastructure that delivers.
You're saying ducks or
ducks?
Ducks.
Oh, okay.
Not ducks.
They're ducks.
That would be
yeah,
very, very unfair.
Suddenly
duck,
I thought
yes,
that there was a duck tax.
No. Well, it might be. Yeah, so it's like a tax that's calculated according to how many of those, I guess, how many they have to, they have. So that, basically, he was saying, if you're trying to deliver these projects at scale and you've got a lot of that infrastructure, it means they are being unfairly penalised for trying to do this work because they have to pay so much of it.
It's almost like having to pay ground rent for where your cables are and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he said that they also face other challenges around, kind of, I guess it sounds quite mundane, but like getting like proper traffic management so they can dig up roads and stuff like that. And also getting access to like multi-dwelling sort of flats and stuff like that so they can deploy it there. Mm. It's really hard to do. They don't always get landlords on side, and how, you know, you need to get hold of landlords, but landlords aren't always around to help with that. So that was like something else. So they're sort of saying, and if those things can get ironed out, the UK will be even, will be even further up the leaderboard of like how big our coverage is.
Was there any discussion at all about access to internet and the amount of people, the amount of adults in the UK that don't even have access to the internet?
Yeah, that was actually that's brought up a couple of times. I'd say there was a few sessions in the afternoon that touched on that. But 3's CEO, Dave Dyson, he sort of made the point, you know, it's really great that we're getting super fast broadband, that's fantastic, but there's still large portions of the UK, both rural and urban areas, which I think a lot of people forget about, like rural areas. Like rural areas, like everyone's kind of like, oh, you know, well, you expect they've just got sheep, they're not gonna have internet, whatever. Whereas there are like you know, big parts of urban areas where kind of internet connectivity is not possible either. But he sort of made the point that super fast broadband connections are a great idea in theory, but for a lot of these people in, like, say, rural and urban areas, it's kind of cost prohibitive to get access to, because you know, either from a device point of view, I guess, or just in terms of the fact you super fast broadband comes with a bit of a cost premium and things like that. But then I don't know, because like I say, this isn't an area I cover, but then in other parts of the presentations there's this case where, like, okay, we're going to get super fast broadband, we need to start turning legacy networks off. So you kind of think, well, that will probably exacerbate the problem, because if you can't afford super fast broadband, you probably rely on those to get internet access and connectivity as well. So I thought that was quite a nice sort of counterpoint to it all, just being like, yeah, well, let's get super fast. And it's like, well, not everyone needs it and not everyone can afford it.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people that, because they can't get fast broadband, they rely on mobile networks instead to do the same things that they would be doing on a computer.
That's exactly what he was saying, like you're saying, you know, the Dave Dyson from Three, that, you know, the industry is so caught up on targets and objectives around the deployment of this, when there are like technology, he made the case for 5G, that, you know, people could just use 5G, they've already got those devices to access those services. So let's not just, you know, throw all the government money. He didn't say this exactly, but this is kind of, you know, it kind of makes sense that, you know, don't get so caught up in investing in that when there are other technologies that could plug the gaps and things like that. And also just in terms of reaching areas that are out of, you know, out of the scope at the moment for super fast broadband. You know, there are other technologies like satellite technologies or that balloon technology stuff that I've seen over
Google thing.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you shouldn't overlook those as well, because they've probably got a use case rather than just chucking all the money at whoever can deploy full fibre.
Digging up roads,
but
disrupting things.
Exactly. But to your point, yeah, like I said, there were sessions on digital inclusion or digital... There were sessions on digital inclusion, but also digital exclusion. Ooh. So no one can decide what to call it, which I found quite interesting.
Well,
But no, that was a really interesting discussion about how...
Was there anyone in favour of digital exclusion?
People who don't have access are the digitally excluded.
Yeah, I've got probably like a hit list of people I'd like to be digitally excluded. Leave me alone.
Stop darkening our Twitter door.
Yeah. Oh, for another podcast.
Digital self-exclusion has been a thing, hasn't it?
Yeah.
When you think of all of the poor people that don't have access to super fast fibre, and then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who are like, I'm going on a digital detox, I just can't stand it anymore.
Imagine if we said, okay, in that case, we're going to unplug yours and give it to someone else who hasn't.
No, they're like,
I need that.
Yeah.
How will people know what I've had breakfast? But no, there was, it was quite an interesting discussion there around skills, on how, obviously, with the pace of technological change, probably fueled by access to faster network technologies, that the kind of the range of essential digital skills people need in communities to get online is changing all the time. So you kind of need to keep up with that as well. So I guess years ago it'd be things like, oh, can you send an email? Do you know how to type in a web address?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, yeah, but with things like AI sort of coming into the home and stuff like that, you know, and people say, oh, we're launching services that would just be voice activated. Do people necessarily know how to access
yeah.
those, although it sounds really simple and stuff?
Like your nephew getting upset that Alexa didn't answer his follow-up
that's
question.
That's right.
Yeah, because he didn't say the proper keyword.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, Caroline.
Yeah. She's not okay.
Well, I have to say, Caroline, you're a very quick study. I mean, for... This isn't supposed to be your area, but you got under the skin of it.
I know.
Pretty
well,
rapidly.
I feel a massive sense of responsibility to Alex. I have to do his his beat justice, but it's a testament to how well he writes and all this. I was just cramming, sat in the press room like, what does this mean? So, there we go.
Well, unlike Caroline, I stayed within my comfort zone this week, at least in terms of subject matter, because I was at Tableau, the data visualization provider, or one of the data visualization providers. I was at their conference in Berlin, so I did leave the country, which is always quite traumatic for me, has to be said. So Tableau, famous for its data visualization software, it's one of the reasons why I decided to spend some time with them this week, because when they do their events in London, I just go to one or two things and then leave. But I wanted to see the culture, because you hear so much about Tableau's culture.
Okay.
So I wanted to see it for myself.
What do you hear about Tableau's culture?
That there's a lot of love for Tableau.
Okay.
The people who use the software, they love data. Data is their religion. And they love to visualize data. It's all about seeing and understanding data.
That's their mission.
I don't know if I would fit right in, but you might, Claire.
Me? I do love data, and I do love data visualization. But I don't love data as much as you do.
You think? Okay, maybe not. A lot of women there, unusually for an IT conference. I'd say, I tried to get numbers from them, but they weren't forthcoming. I'd say probably about a third.
Mm.
Certainly a lot of young women there. A lot of young academics.
Okay.
Use the software for their PhDs and postdocs and stuff. So there's quite a few of them there, for sure. It's very evangelical. It's like being in an evangelical church of data conference. I think the CLIP conference, to be fair, is also a little bit similar to that. But just to be impartial for a second, one of the things they have is they have an Iron Viz competition.
What this is
they have. Three people on stage have been kind of selected through various rounds,
right.
And their task is to produce a really cool looking and useful data visualization within 20 minutes. So they get given a whole load of data in advance so that they can work with this, and they have someone from Tableau or a partner helping them with it.
Mm-hmm.
This year the theme was the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yay!
So they had data about Eurovision. And the three produced these visualizations before our very eyes within 20 minutes. So it's pretty amazing to see them do it. So three of them, the winner, I won't go through all of them, but the winner was Dr. Simon Stuzak, Senior BI Specialist, Hopman Consulting. But yeah, a lot of young academics around doing things with cool things with data and data visualization, etc.
Cool.
What's the point of diversity in AI and data addressed at any point?
It's kind of addressed throughout. They are very hot on anything to do with diversity and so on, and they've just been acquired by Salesforce.
Oh, have they?
Quite similar in their culture. So it's quite, I think culturally, that acquisition is a very good fit. But interesting from a kind of business strategy point of view too. The thing is, Tableau software is like an independent BI tool. So you use it. So you go into the tool and you do cool stuff with data. That's the idea. But actually, there is another approach to business intelligence, which is to take BI out of the tool and put it into applications. Because most people don't really want to go into a BI tool to do things.
Yeah.
And that's why BI is traditionally, they say, only 15% at most of an organisation will ever use a BI tool. but BI would be a good thing for everyone to use.
Okay.
So the thing to do is embed that in applications.
Okay.
And Tableau's beginning to do a bit of that. One of their big competitors, MicroStrategy, is really majoring on this. And the interesting thing with this is, we love speculation on this podcast. Well, once you're acquired, you're acquired. I mean, you belong to someone else,
yeah.
Right? And if Salesforce decide the way to go is to embed analytics and BI in applications, which I can see them doing,
well,
with
yeah.
Einstein Analytics, etc., etc., yeah. Then they may insist that Tableau spends the majority of its R&D time on that sort of thing and not on developing the independent software that these people love so much.
I see, yeah.
More on the integration, you mean?
More integrating into applications,
in
so into a CRM system or an HCM system or whatever.
So, for example, when Salesforce acquired Demandware and then rebranded it the Salesforce Commerce Cloud, it still does pretty much everything that it did when it was Demandware, but it also feeds into every other type of Salesforce systems you may want to.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy.
Well, not every other, but yeah.
they changed the branding.
Yeah.
So with this, they're not going to change the branding. They're going to keep it as Tableau.
Okay. Because
so
of
far.
The community.
Well, maybe because it started off as a laptop application, so it's very much an on-premises thing originally. I mean, they're moving to the cloud, etc., as everyone does.
Oh, yeah.
But if it was already a software as a service BI tool, probably Salesforce would have started to think about changing the name pretty quickly.
What would they call it? The Salesforce...
They would call it Salesforce Analytics, Salesforce BI.
Salesforce Visualization Cloud.
Do you reckon
you've given them the idea?
This must be how
you're welcome, guys.
How their meetings go. What should we call it? Oh, no. Salesforce Analytics. Done. Lunch. Let's go.
So that could be a bit of an issue for Tableau and for its enthusiastic adherents.
Yeah. I know you talked about last week that you could work where you talked through the merger and acquisition between the pair of them,
yeah.
And that you go into the conference, and it's always funny going to conferences straight off something like that's announced,
yeah.
Because a lot of the time they can't talk about it. Was there any talk about it at all?
Their lips were sealed. Their lips were sealed. I mean, I spoke to customers about it, but when the CEO said from the stage, and this is my news story, he said we're going to stick to the mission of seeing and understanding data. I mean, that seems like a very banal thing to say. What else would you say?
Yeah.
But that was very enthusiastically received, so there must be some nervousness that they might get deflected.
I think I'm always
Is the management of Tableau staying?
Yes, initially.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we all
I guess that makes a lot
go.
Of difference,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of where the R&D money is going to go.
They are staying, and they're going to keep their headquarters in Seattle, which is where they are based.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, I do think it is a good cultural fit, based on what you have just told me about Tableau, which I have learned today, and knowing what I do about Salesforce. I do a lot of stuff with Salesforce and quite a lot of their retail customers. But yeah, the Salesforce are very much on the sort of like diversity, inclusion.
Definitely, yeah.
Evangelical
I think it's a good
church type of
the church of Salesforce meets the church of Tableau.
I'm just going to touch very briefly on what was quite high profile, leaving Tableau, parking them for the time being. We did discuss them last week too, but there's a big story that had a lot of high profile this week about Oxford University being given 150 million quid by this private equity boss, an American guy who's a Trump supporter, which is you know, kind of the BBC's questions were along those kind of lines. I mean, from it's a lot of money, but it's for a humanities centre, so it's not just about AI, but it's looking at AI in the context of the humanities and philosophy and so on, which does seem like a good way to go.
It's
although
important.
It's a lot of money to give to a very wealthy institution.
Well, I mean, if anyone's going to solve the issue of AI ethics, why not the intelligent minds at Oxford University?
Well, why not turn it into a collaborative effort and fund more universities across the whole UK working on this stuff?
Oh my god, Caroline, can't solve everything. It's not
just saying. for the many, not the few, but there we go.
Just trying to put a positive spin on it.
Okay, so from AI to augmented reality, AR, Claire.
Yes.
On the catwalk.
On the catwalk. So so basically this week or last week, at some point in the not so distant past, ASOS announced that they were doing a trial for augmented reality catwalk. So what that means is that people who have the ASOS app on their smartphones can point their phone at a flat surface and then view an augmented reality catwalk showcasing products that they can buy from ASOS.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like watching models walk around on your table wearing clothes that you might want to buy. And basically ASOS is using this as a different way to showcase some of the products that they use. So ASOS spend a lot of time photographing models within their headquarters, using lots of different types of, you know, like pictures and lighting so that you can get the best view of what a product might actually look like if it's on you, which they also use their AI fit match software for. So you put in some details about your size and they tell you what would be the best fit of garment for you. They're just sort of adding to the different ways that customers can view products that the retailers who have stores can sort of fill that gap with by showing you the product and letting you try it on.
So it's more of a, because it's quite almost like a passive experience, just scrolling through web pages of, oh, I want tops, show me tops.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it kind of brings the product to life a bit more, I guess, hopefully drive sales.
Yeah, so it's more interactive.
More dynamic and stuff,
You can see a little model walking down the catwalk in there.
Are they like set sizes of models? Because like you said, with the sizes, so is it like technology that, oh, you know, if you put in your sizes, the model will expand or shrink depending on what your dimensions are?
Oh, a different model will be shown?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be awesome. I haven't actually asked. It's something that came to mind when I was reading the press release, because I have spoken to them before about, you know, fit match.
Yeah.
And they want to make sure that people get the right fit of garment the first time. So if you could say, oh, I want to see what someone my size would look like in it, that would be really helpful. And I will definitely ask them, because they're normally quite open to sharing their ideas.
Or
be
like, that's
even
a great idea.
What?
Oh, that's a great idea. We're having it.
Cheers there.
No commission for you.
Come anytime.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could use your own photo, your own image, your 360 image, to wear clothes that you might want to buy?
That would be cool if you could put your face on the model. I think that there are third party providers that do that. Take a photo of you with the. There was a software company that I was talking to, who I can't remember the name of, that were trialing that, putting your face on a 3D model wearing the clothes, just so that you can imagine yourself in it. Imagine yourself in this dress.
I know there's been like trials, in-store trials and stuff, like where you stand at the mirror in the changing room and it like kind of imposes like a holographic thing to make, this is what you would look like in this outfit, where you just kind of, well, I could just nip in there and try on. So, but yeah, this is cool.
Sometimes you haven't showered, Caroline.
Yeah,
you don't want to try on the
True.
There were those mirrors as well, the AR mirrors that show you what makeup would look like. If you were get a makeover, you sit in front of the mirror and it goes, this is what this mascara would look like on you, kind of like the Instagram filters.
Oh yeah,
you know. So you don't have to actually make an effort when you're putting a picture of yourself on Instagram, it just does the makeup for you.
L'Oreal Professional launched an app recently, didn't they? It's called Style My Hair or something like that.
Where
you can try on different hair styles.
I just get the hairstyle and then have my regrets after.
Yeah, fearless you.
Hair growth.
Way to go.
So yeah, that's that.
It's been a very rich vein for you, hasn't it, ASOS?
I know.
They're doing a lot of stuff.
They are.
To be fair, and they are quite trendsetting, aren't they, in the retail space.
Yeah, I think it's because their target audience is 20-somethings who are used to shopping on their phone, even when they're in a store with clothes in front of them. So, they try lots of different things and then they see what customers like and what they don't, and they either run with it or they try something different. I think that's the future of retail.
Mm.
Angelica, have you seen this kind of innovation in retail in Brazil?
The what they say there is that Brazil is about 5 years behind in terms of technology innovation.
Okay.
But that can't be the case anymore, especially after companies started investing again after the as a way to bounce back from recession.
Mm-hmm. 5 years behind.
Yeah, that's what some people say, but a lot of the innovations that you see here are getting there in Brazil. One example would be the Style My App tool launched by L'Oreal in Brazil to using augmented reality to help people try new hairstyles and things like that. So augmented reality in changing rooms is also there. A lot of stuff around multi-channel is there too. So people realize now that they can't stop investing in innovation as they try to bounce back from the recession. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. So with over 200 million consumers having to be reached somehow, retailers have to do something, have to innovate.
Mm-hmm. So we spent a bit of time talking about British politics in this podcast, but I guess compared to Brazilian politics at the moment, this is a picnic.
Yeah, so recently, during the presidential campaign last year, it emerged that the now president, Jair Bolsonaro, was using companies to mass message voters through WhatsApp. And that's illegal, so using private funds for campaigning is illegal. So companies were contracting services to blast message people during the campaign. And that's still under investigation. Seems like the investigation is getting nowhere, but there's new evidence that Bolsonaro and his campaign team hired a Spanish company to send these automatic messages to thousands of telephone numbers.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So dark days in Brazil, really, at the moment. Yeah,
dark days for us all, it seems.
Well, on that note, that note of darkness, we shall all we've got time for this week, I think.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to add, guys?
No.
Things aren't as bad as they seem.
Thank you, Claire.
Hopefully.
And we're going to be losing Angelica, unfortunately.
Oh, that is sad.
For a little while, that is sad. What we do without you.
Well, we'll probably want to do more public sector stuff.
Yeah.
You will have to share that.
To pick up public sector as quickly as Caroline picked up broadband.
You're the one.
Brilliant, thanks, guys.
Have fun.
Have
fun listening.
Okay, well, it just remains for me to say thank you to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Claire.
No worries.
Thank you very much indeed to Angelica for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.